Welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode number 107. The show where we discuss the Linux operating system and what it can do for you and your life. Joining me in this show are two co-hosts tonight. Let me start with the man who brings the goods week after week, the Linux maven, the door-to-door geek, Steve McLaughlin from door2doorgeek.com. What's up, Door?
Hello, Steve. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good.
Good. I see that at least now you don't sound sick.
Yeah, I'm proud of myself. I demolished that cold.
Good.
Just like did all the things that colds don't like, and I got rid of it pretty fast because I really didn't want to have it for too long. So,
chicken soup?
Yeah, tons of chicken soup. Tons of vitamin C. You can't really OD on vitamin C. There is one symptom that will happen if you do, and it's called the runs. So yeah, if you have that, there's too much vitamin C, and that's the worst thing that happens to you. So, and you know, fluids and rest and cold just went bye-bye. So, yeah, I feel
very
good.
Cool.
Also joining us on the show tonight, Cody Cooper. Cody Super Coop. Cooper. What's going on, Cody?
Hey, thanks, Steve. Not much. You know, just still recovering from a certain conference in a state far, far away. And just glad to finally be on the show again.
Yeah, things are finally starting to calm down after the conference. Mm-hmm. And for both, I wonder who's farther away, you or me? Probably the same? No, you're probably farther.
No, I got to be farther, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, good to have you on. I want to make an announcement here, guys. There's going to be a bit of a change in Linux for the Rest of Us. No need for alarm. But what is going to happen now is Cody Cooper is going to become the host of Linux for the Rest of Us. And you could call him Super Coop. You could call him Cody. You could call him whatever you want. But he is going to be the man who is going to, run the show, drive the train, converse with Door, and bring you guys good Linux stuff. Now, I think this is going to be a really good change because Cody runs Linux, right, Cody?
Yep, every single day. And
he runs Linux
every day for about the last... I was looking at some old files of mine about three and a half years now.
Yeah. And we all get along. I think Cody's perfect for the job. He has enthusiasm for the operating system. He's going to bring that to the show. And I think it's going to go really, really well. So I hope you guys enjoy that. This will be my last show. I will read the emails for the last show. And then we're going to turn it over to the guys. And I'm going to probably pop in now and then. Or these guys are probably going to be making fun of me throughout different episodes. So I'm going to have to come back and retort somehow. So I'm not going away forever. I'm still going to be connected up. So Cody, thank you for doing that, man. And what do you think? What do you think about that?
I consider it to be a big honor, really. And, it's funny to think that, you know, years ago, and I've talked about this on shows before, you know, I was just a little listener, and then I started, I got inspired by Door because he was calling in daily with voicemails and giving great, great tips. And I just thought I would start calling in and writing in and sort of, you know, getting my foot in the door just to meet you guys was, I mean, just talk to you guys online was one thing, to meet you in person and then to be on the shows, but to now know that I'm gonna host my favorite not only Podnuts podcast but my favorite podcast, it's quite the honor. I'm gonna do the very best I can. I'm considering this a great opportunity for me to learn more about the platform, and what a better show and what a better co-host to do it with than Steve McLaughlin. So I'm very honored. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And I agree. This show is easy because Door always brings the goods. And I'm looking forward to sitting back and listening to you guys. So it's going to be a good time.
Okay. Super quick, Steve. Driving directions, mind you, on Google Maps. You are about 1,000 miles away. Cody, 2,400 miles
wow.
away.
I'm way off. Wow. My geography's terrible.
Looking at the map, I have a hard time comparing a vertical versus a horizontal.
Yeah.
Like very bad. So I literally thought, they're not that different, are they?
Yeah, I think I have that problem too, but thanks for clearing it up.
No problem. I do what I can. And I'll say, unfortunately, I glanced at Ken Simeon on Google Plus, and he just posted pictures of a mint chocolate imperial stout. So I have to close the page now.
I know. I hate when I get on Google Plus and the streams just take me away.
Yes,
I was reading that one about the 3D printer earlier, and I'm like, wow, that's so cool. Oh, wait, I got to get ready for a show. So, what do you want to talk about today, Door? Oh, let me finish drinking your, what is that, Mountain Dew there?
Well, I do the Dew. It has a lot of caffeine in it.
Wow, I thought you did the Coke. A cola.
This
a cola.
Was on sale.
Okay.
And I already have kids, so I'm not worried about the yellow number 5.
Yeah, that's obvious. What do you want to go over today?
Well, I wanted to piggyback on one of the things that was in my talk I gave at OLF. People have to stop and realize for millennia, human beings have stood on the shoulders of people before them. And I mean this in absolutely every single way. And the only kind of example I can come up with is there are things every day that we interact with, which we take for granted and we don't understand, but we utilize them. I don't stop to myself and say, you know, I work about 26 miles away. Let me see if I can find a way to make it there and I'll build it myself. You know, people just don't do that. People instinctively look around them for solutions. For some reason on the Linux world, at least on computing worlds, some of us have the mentality of we can figure this out. We can get this working, and we isolate ourselves from the rest of the internet. I can't highly encourage against this enough, because what makes Linux Linux is not the free software. What makes Linux Linux is not the open nature of GNU or how everything's text files. What makes Linux Linux is the amount of people giving themselves to help others and to help the overall projects. Stop trying to figure stuff out on your own, people. And I kind of hinted at this talking to you, one of you guys, how for some reason on the internet, people think differently. Like if I walk down the street, if I break down the side of the road and the first car does not stop to pick me up, I don't scream and curse at them and call them all kinds of names and say how rude they are. But if I hop in an IRC room and I ask a question and the first person doesn't answer me right away, people get offended by it. And I don't understand, why is there a difference between the physical and the digital world with this kind of stuff? Because to me, it's the same. You know, if I ask a question in IRC, I think, well, he's busy doing something. This guy's busy going to pick up his kid on the road. This guy's busy holding a conversation already. I don't expect them to answer. So we have to be patient. We have to realize we're talking to people when we're in forums, or when we're in IRC, or when we're in chats of any kind, or when we're in voice chats or live show chats or anything else. We are always dealing with people. Okay. Join a forum. Join a couple forums. Join an IRC. Join a couple IRCs. Follow a couple shows when they go live. Join their chats. Find other people that you can communicate with to help lessen the burden of stuff that you yourself have to know through and through. I can't encourage it enough.
Yeah, that's definitely a good tip. I don't go around joining too many forums, but even if you don't join, read them, read the forums, read what people are saying. You just get so much help just from even that. I'm talking about if you're not the most social person in the world, you can still be a part of a community. And what's going to happen is as you read and get help and read enough posts on forums, and this has happened to me, you read enough posts on a forum and then you just feel like you have to contribute something back. So you join and you start writing back and then you become an integral part of the forum. So yeah, the community is so huge, especially with Linux.
I definitely agree, guys. And ultimately what it comes down to, and you're definitely getting toward this door, but your fault in that is that you're expecting everyone to be a logical, compassionate human being, both in the real world and online. And I think that if you represent yourself in the way that you do in the real world online, then you're going to open yourself up to not only being taught things, especially in a community like this, but being able to gain knowledge and then sort of recontribute back. So,
yeah. Well, and the other example I'll use, honestly, Steve, there was a time I treated forms like a plague. Okay. And IRC, I thought, man, there's no way I'm smart enough to hang with these people. If you feel that way, why not then browse YouTube or Vimeo or other video sites to find out what you need? And then when you think you found something that you think's cool, post your own content, make your own screencast. The number one way to get questions answered by people is by you yourself helping other people, irregardless of the format, of the mode, of the medium that you give back. You will be recognized by somebody.
Definitely.
I agree. Nice one, Dora.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to kind of give an example here. I had a request from now two people in the last couple months to give what I would consider to be like top five apps to look at if you want to accomplish X task. I had to reword that myself because all of them said the best five apps for this or the top five apps for that. And if you listen to my talk, I kind of hate when people say this is the best, this is the top, you know, because it's not true. So I will say these are the top apps I would consider people looking at if you need to accomplish a task. Because it's like I'm spreading the net wide, if you will. You know what I mean? Odds are one of these are going to fit your need.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Giving people options.
Right. And I'm going to stand on the shoulders of somebody else that already did it for the first example. You like to tie back there?
Oh, yeah.
This is an article on Tech Source, which is actually Juanza.com. And it's the best ways to read ebooks on Ubuntu. And I'm going to have to do this for some of these categories, guys, because I do not read ebooks. I think I have figured out a way to take an ebook and get the audio text to speech and listen to it as a podcast. That I'll do. But if you need to read ebooks, I can tell you, bar none, the first application is probably going to fit every single need you need, whether it's to convert an ebook, open some kind of format of ebook, or to actually read an AA ebook, and it's pronounced Calibre. Let me zoom it up. Calibre. I honestly have never heard of a file type that this will not open or save to. And it looks like it does a decent job as a library, let's say, reader, almost like iTunes for reading material. And looks like you can actually read stuff from inside of it as well.
It looks great.
Yeah.
I've used it pretty extensively the past year and a half for different books. And yeah, the way, and Dora's right, I mean, it reads a variety of formats. It does a conversion. I mean, think of it almost like as like an all-in-one kitchen sink, almost like VLC is for media. Calibre is like that for ebook, any format. It's great.
Huh.
Yeah, and I will say throughout there, I've heard it pronounced multiple ways, Calibre. Just because the RE is backwards, it confuses a simple mind like mine. So I'll leave it at that. The other ones on the list, I've never heard of this second one, which I would pronounce Events. I'll say Events. This one looks very basic, very slim, very quick, almost, okay. And here's the rewind part. A lot of people have already used this and they didn't even realize it. This is the default PDF reader in Ubuntu. But when you open it up in Ubuntu, you don't see the name of the application. They typically call it Document Viewer.
Okay.
Can't get much simpler than this one.
Well, and that's what I personally like about this one. No frills, no real toolbars. There's just one little find bar that you can pop up and a zoom thing you can see. It's clean, very not cluttered, very easy to use. The next one I've heard pretty good things about, I will say, and it's called Ocular, O-K-U-L-A-R. This is a KDE-specific reader, so it will stylistically go along with your KDE desktop if that is what you are running. But you don't have to have KDE to install this, because it will install KDE for you. Sure. One of the things this opens up that I'm not sure the others can is CHM files. That should ring a bell to Windows decks. This is the default help file format since, I think, Windows 95.
Wow.
And I can't remember what it stands for. And there are some genuine ebooks that were published in this format.
Yeah, I've read a couple like that. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I can think why is it's actually an HTML format. It's just structured in such a way so there isn't actual contents.
Yeah.
And things like top and back, I think, come automatic in the format, so you don't have to do it. There's only two more, and they are definitely not as popular as used, but they still might be worth your try. One is called MUPDF. Super lightweight one. So if you're running LXDE, Awesome, or OpenBox, this might be the one you want to use. Down and dirty, open up, read, close. The other one is FB Reader. And I can't remember what the FB really first stood for.
Facebook.
I hope not.
I know you'd like that.
But it does have a toolbar in it. So it does have some options. Feed books. That's what it is.
Oh, there you go.
Feed books.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it opens a format called FB2, so.
Right. This was a open format where I'll say there is some content available. I doubt if you have content in mind and then you find it there. I think the inverse is more likely. You go there and then you find, oh, well, this is here. Because I don't think it houses, let's say, Harry Potter or other popular formats or articles or books, or you know what I mean.
Yep.
So that was hopefully the first of many quick list of applications to get down and dirty, get things done, is the best way I can put it out there. And Rhino is asking a question, and when Rhino asks a question, I try to answer it when I see it. He says, are there any PDF creators in Linux? And the answer is yes. There's a very easy one. And by easy, I mean there's a very easy answer. And that is LibreOffice. Now, see, that's LibreOffice. That's why I think it's Calibri.
Calibri.
Whatever.
Calibri.
Yeah. Thank you.
You got it. You got it.
Okay. LibreOffice can save as PDF. I will say, Jonathan was the one who basically said to me, PDF is an open format, but people take it and butcher it, and they use their own little special sauce sometimes.
Really?
Which makes it so sometimes you can't open certain PDFs in certain applications that open PDFs just fine.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, and there is more stuff out there. That might be one of the ones that we bring in coming weeks.
I recently used LibreOffice to make PDFs, and it's a snap. I mean, you just use the word processor in LibreOffice and export the PDF. It comes out great. Lots of options, too, by the way, to make the graphics like quality and different things like that.
Definitely. It's a great... I use the word processor all the time. It's a great set of software.
Yeah, and I will say, devil's advocate, Office 2007, I believe, was the first. In Office 2010, you can download a free snap-in, plug-in, whatever it's called. And Word can save the PDF as well. I don't remember having really lots of options in it, but yeah. I had to do it at a friend's cube at work. But it did work. And I will say, like you, Steve, LibreOffice, I did like those options because we had to send out a mass email to everybody in the administration, and we have a maximum file size limit of like 8 gigs or 6 gig. I'm sorry, 8 megs or 6 megs, something tiny.
Sure.
And this thing was filled with images. So when they opened it up in Adobe Professional and hit save, it was like 10 megs.
Adobe Professional.
I know. So on my little LibreOffice, my open source free software, I just opened it up and hit save as. I went to the options. I reduced the quality. It was still legible, and it pushed it down to like 4.
Perfect.
Yeah, but, you know, they still want to use Word.
Yeah. And great timing on bringing up these ebook readers. Did you bring these up for any specific reason?
No, it just so happens. I completely forgot until you just said that. The bundle of humbleness has, I'd say, a unique offering. It's in conjunction with the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America. A humble bundle, a humble ebook bundle. Jeez.
Mm-hmm. Neat.
Yeah, but that really confused me for a second. And there's eight books, which I'll say Cory Doctorow has a book in there. That alone is almost making me want to buy it just because I want to. I've never read anything of his because it involves reading. So, you know, this one tempted me. I'm not going to lie. If you pay more than $11, which is the average, this is a much higher average than other bundles, I will say.
Mm-hmm.
You get 2 extra books. Neil
Gaiman.
Gaiman,
yeah.
Sorry, I'm blind. Yeah, there isn't I. Signal to Noise, and another one, Old Man's War by John Schlesinger.
So these look like, I like how these are current. You know, they definitely tell that these are like written in the, you know, near the recent past.
Right. It's not just some, you know, random books picked from the past 10, 15 years. They're all current, and some authors I've heard of, and I'm not even that much of a reader. And as always, remember that if you do purchase this bundle, you can choose and distribute whatever you do contribute to a number of different sources, either to the Humble Bundle as a tip to the writers, or also it still supports Child's Play. So regardless of what your motivations for buying it are, know that the money is still going to a good cause, and you get to decide exactly where it does go.
That's very cool.
Yeah, and I'll say I think the ratio of payers has changed. I believe it used to be more higher percentage of Windows users. It looks like Mac is starting to dip into the Linux. I mean, Mac is starting to dip into the Windows people. So a lot of Mac people must want sci-fi books.
I looked at it earlier, Dory. You're right. The Mac part of the pie, it kicked up at least 10%. I mean, it's pretty substantial just from like 2 hours ago. But I mean, you got to figure this is a great opportunity for them to realize, okay, a lot more people have tablets nowadays. I mean, they branched off from the games going into the albums. Was 2 months ago. And, and now they're doing ebooks. I mean, it's, yeah, any way that we can support this organization and who they're supporting, I think it's just worthwhile for the community at large. So definitely check it out.
Yeah, and they're DRM free, which means you can download them and with Calibre, change them into anything you want.
There you go.
You know, you can save them as TIFFs or JPEGs, probably, even if you want. I don't know.
That's cool. Yeah, this site is really blowing up, isn't it, these days?
It's almost insane how popular it is. And it's obviously not a fad. I'll say that.
And it's just a great idea.
Yeah. Over 21,000 bundles sold so far. I believe this is the first day. This is Tuesday, October the 9th, and it looks like it is going on until Monday, October 22nd.
Very awesome.
Absolutely. Well, maybe the 23rd. Okay, this next is an example for people not to get discouraged. Okay, I'm linking to a posting in the Linux Basics forums, which is one of the forums I help admin, which I will say is not insanely active. I kind of like that a little bit because it means it's more of a personal experience And it's not like you miss a day and then you come back and there's 85 postings that you have to quote unquote catch up on. There's, you know, anywhere from 10 to zero postings a day. And this new fellow, Salty Noob, which I got to say, it's a good name.
It is a good name.
He stumbled across a script that would convert WMA Windows Media audio files into MP3. I will say it looks more like a move to me than an actual converting. But I have to do some more research into this. He posted it Tuesday, December 18th. Nobody answered him. This is an example of not to get discouraged. Okay. A quick tip: when you're in forums and you post something, you don't get an answer, why not follow up your own posting in that topic thread with a new posting right underneath it, reply to your own posting and just say bump, B-U-M-P.
Yep.
That's like a little dinger out there to people. I haven't gotten any help yet. Are you sure there's nobody out there that could help me? So if you do that, sometimes people will then see it because maybe they missed it. They were too busy. They were at OLF. They drank a lot. And, so I'm going to see if after the show I can help him out.
What's his problem?
He basically says, I wanted to share something with everybody. He wants to remove the spaces for an underscore. And he said, and then he said he tried to remove the underscore, but the script didn't work. So what I'm going to have to do is basically just take a file, name it test_file.wma, run this and see what happens, and then go back and do some engineering. Now I will say to you guys right here, and it would be nice if I would post this in the chat. I want you guys to notice, especially the second set of stuff where it says move uppercase, and the third line down, MV$i echo $i pipe TR, and then you see what looks like capital A dash capital Z, and then lowercase a to lowercase z. We're going to bounce back to that in a little bit. That's called a regular expression. One of the most insanely powerful text searching things in any operating system. This is not a Linux only thing. You can do this in Windows. A lot of even advanced people don't know how to do that, don't know what they are or how to take advantage of them. But if you're doing anything from file recovery to just searching for information, or you want to do a find and replace of information, regular expressions are like the Hope Diamond. It's like, if you get that, you're set for life.
Sure.
Okay. So I'm going to try to help him out. Anyone else out there, you think you can help him out, just go to forum.linuxbasics.com under board index software and scripting, converting WMA to MP3. Because the only way I can put it, people, and Lotfi heard me say this to him the other day, because I helped him out too. Yeah. If we don't help each other, who is going to support us? You know, if we don't take the time out of our day to once in a while help somebody, how can we expect to get help when we need it? So I encourage everybody, at least once a week, try to find somebody on somewhere you can help, whether it's the Podnuts forums, Podnuts TeamSpeak, Podnuts IRC, anywhere else, just find somebody to help.
It'll make it feel good, too.
Yes. Without a frying pan or an egg being involved.
Well, along those lines, with his post is more geared toward converting just the file names over, like in a large quantity. But he titled the posting converting WMA to MP3. If you guys do have a bunch of WMA audio, or if you're downloading audio from somewhere and it's the only format is WMA, at least in the software center, Ubuntu Software Center, you just search for Sound Converter. It's a small program. It converts a variety of formats to a variety of formats. And I've used that in the past because I used to have an Olympus recorder, which only recorded in WMA. And I converted that to MP3 and WAV for other purposes. So if you do need to convert those, try that program. And then if you need to do a large number of title changes, then let's help this guy solve his problem. Then we can make us all that much better.
Yeah, good call.
Okay.
Does that use FFmpeg as the engine?
I want to say yes. I believe I had to download it as well. It's been a while since I've used it because I since bought a new recorder that just does the high quality MP3 recording. But
gotcha.
Okay. I wasn't sure whether or not to put this next link in the show, guys, but the name of the domain is Dark Duck, so. It was hard for me to say no to it just because it sounded cool.
Why were you debating?
Well, because it's really super, super vague, general, overarching, non-specific, a beginner's guide to Linux. And I will say this is not a beginner's guide to Linux. This is a intro to what Linux is. I'm trying to verb this really right. This is a super broad intro to how you can perceive Linux as a new user. That's what I'll say. And it's like really basic. They tell you how Linux works in less than 150 words, it looks like.
He's getting pretty bashed in his comments section.
Well, he's a duck.
Hey.
And he does get bashed for one of the things for recommending Virtual PC 2007. Oh, wow. I know, but I'll say this. A lot of Microsoft long-term users are comfortable using Microsoft products, and that is a Microsoft product.
Yeah.
You know, if you tell them to download Oracle VirtualBox, they'll be like, I don't need a database. So I'm not going to cast a stone on this guy just for saying that kind of thing.
Right.
I will say this is in no shape, way, or form complete, but this can help a new user have a little light bulb go off in their head.
Oh, that's cool. It's needed.
Yeah. And it's a duck. So that's cool. Speaking of duck, that's maybe the worst segue ever. Since like a third of my talk at OLF had to deal with food, I said, why not? Let's follow in a little rabbit hole. There's an application for the GNOME desktop designed to help you store, search, and retrieve recipes. Doesn't have to be food recipes. Technically, this could be beer recipes,
waffle recipes.
Excellent. So buyer, if you're listening, this might be a good one for your beer recipes things. It's called a Recipe Express, so it's Express. The main thing that honestly I like about this is the simplicity. Like you with your note stuff, Steve, you don't want stuff overcomplicated. With this one, basically, when you click, you only have this to pick from: category, name, yield, in ingredients, and preparation. And nothing is mandatory. So you can leave stuff out. Like if you never want to enter a yield, you don't enter a yield ever, and you're fine.
Looks pretty cool for the cook.
Yeah, I think it's clean enough to where a new user should have really no issues jumping right in and using it or showing somebody else it and how to use it.
Yeah. It's a whole distro?
Oh, no. This is just the application.
Okay.
See, I love to cook, so, man, I cannot wait to play with this later.
Well, I'll say the only I don't want to say downside. When you install this, it is not a sudo apt git. It's not from a repository. It's not from a software center. You basically have to download a zip file, but it's a tar gzip, which is a zip file on Linux. And you have to unextract it and then run a script, install.sh. I highly encourage people, if you're on anything, whether it's Mint 12, Mint 13, Synarch, Sabian, anything, if you're all hesitant or you have that little like twitch when you see how to install this happen, load up a live environment. Try to install it there. You know what I mean? Script file installs don't always go perfect. They can. Matters how it's designed, but it might not. So I got to throw that out there.
Okay.
But as always, there's always good documentation. If you just take your time and follow the directions, it always seems new. Just take your time. If not, then ask one of us and we'll help you through it.
Yeah. Very cool. And I will say, I think I'm now to the point where I'm not going to recommend Linux Mint for a new user again. Period. I'm done.
Really?
Yeah. For a couple reasons. If I'm going to suggest Mint, that entails I trust the people behind Linux Mint and the people at Ubuntu. Because without Ubuntu, there is no Mint. Okay, period. It's based off Ubuntu. So I'm like double trusting things to stay around. Personal gripe, I can't stand what Mint does with the Firefox default search. They make you go earn a PhD to change how the default search behavior is. That honestly, I will say made me mad how they did that. Ikey is working on the next version of Solus OS, but he is still updating Solus OS 1.2. Another dark duck link. And I did a little bit of, I guess, soul searching, a little bit of really deep thought on how Solus OS works. I really have no problem suggesting it to a new user. And here's part of the reason. The partitioner during the install completely kind of sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the logic behind it. If I suggest a new user to use Solus OS and they either don't figure it out themselves and they don't ask for help, I don't want them running Linux. Because it's like I said, you got to ask people for help. I mean, test number one, young Padawan, do you ask for help? Or do you just
pound? So you're going to purposely give them something complicated.
Well, here's not complicated, I'll say. Just something that's different enough. It's not complicated once you do it. It's not. It's just different enough to throw a new user enough of a curveball to where they're like, what am I supposed to do here? You know, and if they don't look at YouTube and search how to install Solus OS, or they don't ask me, or they don't ask somebody else,
then they don't want them running Linux. That's so funny, Dor.
Well, I know it's almost bad of me to say that. I do understand, and I do understand that's kind of bad that I say that.
I get what you mean, though. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say I don't want lazy people running Linux.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It makes sense.
Yeah, but I will say once you get it installed, it is just as easy, if not easier, to do stuff in Solus OS than it is Mint. I firmly believe that. One of the things Solus OS does that I've never seen Mint do is if you constantly install like .deb files from double-clicking on them, it will eventually say, you constantly double-click these files to install them. Do you just want me to grant them admin access? And you can hit yes or no. So the system basically knows if you're double-clicking something, just grant it admin access and just install it. where every other operating system on the face of the planet that I've seen, you always have to put your password in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean that if a malicious application tries to run, it isn't going to prompt you for access. I've tested this. SolarisOS recognizes it is in the GUI, and it is a physical double-click action that's causing it.
Oh, very cool.
So that's a good thing. And there's a little write-up here, again, on DarkDuck, where he basically, this was the guy that basically prompted me to think about this, where he says, SolarisOS Eveline 1.2 is good for newbies. I honestly can't argue with him. I was pushing it really hard for a while. I had at least 12 or 14 people go ahead and try to install it. And only one person had true breakage. There's a caveat in there. The one person that has true breakage was our friend InfoLookup. God bless him. He breaks everything. He's like me. You know what I mean? He was doing some little hackery stuff and it broke. On the inverse, Black Hammer could not install it to save his life on his notebook. The Owens clan has some funky hardware, I'll say that. Every time you went to boot it, black screen. And what turns out is SolarisOS by default has what's called a PAE kernel, which enables it in 32-bit mode to see something like 84 gigabytes of RAM, where your normal 32-bit is only 4, and that's all that you can see. PAE makes it so you can see a lot more. For some reason, the PAE kernel was doing something, and it wouldn't let it boot on his laptop, so he got a non-PAE version, booted right up, installed right. Perfectly fine.
So with the PAE version, not only does it see that there's more RAM, can it actually utilize it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, that is amazing.
Well, and now I believe even Ubuntu comes default with their 32-bit version with PAE enabled. So I honestly say, why would you install 64-bit?
Exactly. I mean,
do you like pushing nails through your finger? What possible justification? Larger processing block sizes. Ooh, that makes me tingly. No, that's not a good reason.
The only reason I run 64, well, that I used to after today, was so that I could utilize my RAM. I had no idea about this PAE, so yeah, I can't wait to go back.
Well, and I'll say, even if a distro doesn't support it, 90% of the time in the repo, they do have a PAE kernel. So it is possible to implement after the fact.
Okay.
So you're saying install 32-bit rather than 64-bit, your recommendation?
Both of these boxes have 16 gig. They're running 32-bit, and they both utilize 16 gig just fine.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, 64-bit OSs have given me a rash for over 10 years, and unless I see something, a really true compelling reason to change, I'm not going to change. I mean, you know, well, it ain't. It doesn't exist.
If it's not necessary, why do it?
Yeah. Yeah, unless you really like watching nails go through your finger.
Because I'm probably going to install SolarisOS on this new computer I got. And I'm looking at Dark Duck's right up here, and he talks about 32 and 64, and it made me think about which one to install because I had no clue I even had to choose. So I'll probably just choose 32-bit, and I'll be okay, right?
Oh, yeah. And here's the best thing about 32-bit. You always have a broader range of software selection available to you.
Yep.
Period. Yeah, and I'll say what you're looking for, honestly, Steve, it's going to be called Solus Eveline 1.2 latest version.
Okay.
With that version, you truly get like Firefox 16 or whatever was released yesterday. Kind of thing. He keeps that really up to date.
Sweet.
Yep.
Awesome.
Okay, this next one I have to mention just because it's pie. I kind of like pie. Over at linuxuser.co.uk, they have what basically equates to a step-by-step-by-step on how to build a file server with a Raspberry Pi.
Jeez.
Yeah.
The hard drive is going to be bigger than the Pi.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, unless you have a 64 gig thumb drive.
Right.
But, you know, come on. We don't want to use a thumb drive for this. We want to use an external drive for this. The base of it is Arch, which means a couple things. Super streamlined operating system. With Arch, you never get stuff that you don't want. It always starts very thin. It has SSH capabilities, so you can be a command line. And if you forward X, technically, you can remote into the Pi from a multitude of places. And if you open up ports on your firewall, technically from the outside, you can too. and also is going to install Samba. Samba is the file sharing. I mean, that is the tool that is going to enable browsing your network, accessing files. It also is going to use a dynamic DNS tool, which means the IP address can flow and change all at once. You will still be able to access it. And it's going to have a BitTorrent daemon on it.
Ah.
So technically, you can remotely start torrents on your Pi.
Mm-hmm.
I know. That made me a little bit giddy when I saw that. Now, I will say it is a quote-unquote step-by-step, but it's really not telling you to issue commands and stuff. It's actually telling you in human words, in English, what to do.
Good. I like that.
I don't know. I didn't go through it, so I don't know if it's better or worse, but I think for the newest of the new user, it would be better.
If it's easier or digestible, more people are going to get it right off the bat. So why not? If you're communicating anything, why not try to do it to the widest audience possible?
Right. Yeah. Now down finally in step 12 or so, they actually show you output of a file. So they do. The only thing I'll say, I wish they color coded those kind of things so they would stick out more. But that's just me being picky.
And if they can't figure it out, they don't deserve to run Linux.
Whoa. Is that a quote?
Simmer down now.
Oh, man. I'm going to have a little fun with this.
I know. Well, okay. I'm going to call somebody out. Here's a perfect example.
Okay.
There's a guy in the chat. His name's Martin. He obviously knows computers. He obviously knows basics about interfaces. He obviously knows how to use Google at the same time. Every time he asks me a question, I can't just go into Google and type his question and get an answer. Because he's done that before.
Right, you know what I mean? Right.
He's the kind of guy, when he asks a question, I know it's going to actually be something that, I don't want to say requires thought, but actually needs to be analyzed.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You're like the tier two level now.
And I like that. I ain't gonna lie.
Sure.
But if he can't figure it out, he could go to hell. okay. We got to move to the next one. I've never heard of this application, and I will say there is a lot of applications to do this kind of task. I like this one because it seems teenier, tinier, lighter, quicker, snappier. It's called Photox. I'm guessing, again, F-O-T-O-X-X. Photox.
Sounds good.
That's what I'm...
This looks like the Irfan view of Linux.
Yeah. Call me a card.
Irfan view?
Yeah. I use that at work.
Nice.
It's a photo manager with a lot of basic editing features built in. I don't really have a lot of pictures because I literally just don't take a lot of pictures, nor do I create art of any kind. So I'm really not the target for this, but I will say it looks pretty good. Now, what it's not good at, quote unquote, there are many reports about crashes from users that try to do HDR processing, which I'm going to guess is a raw format off of a camera.
High definition resolution. Yes, that's correct.
Right. So I'm going to guess, to be honest, it's probably camera by camera basis. I might have a camera where it never crashes. you and Steve might have a camera where every time you do it, it crashes. So
isn't that the way where you take pictures where you just kind of layer different pictures over each other to get certain highlights showing up?
I don't know.
So they look almost photorealistic plus.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay.
I'll go for that. With that said, I have heard a lot of cameras have a tendency to do the things their own way, which might be a cause for this breakage. There's not many export features. You can export to PNG, JPEG, bitmap, and TIFF. That's it. So there's lots of stuff you can't export to. The gist I'll tell you guys is this sounds like it's a little bit newer. Not that it's lacking features per se, but it's newer and it's still in the process of growing. With that said, I have a strange inkling for a lot of people out there, this app will actually fit your needs because it's just basic. And most of us are not pro people that need an entire system with a workflow in it, you know, to process 2,000 pictures at a whack.
And I really like the editing capabilities I'm seeing so far, because I've been doing some special editing of photos recently, and I've had to watch a lot of GIMP videos on YouTube just to kind of navigate around, whereas in Photoshop I could do it, you know, because I used that for years, but now I've switched, and this will be a cool tool. It's not like super, super basic, but some of the things that I'm seeing it does on the page that you've provided, Dor, are kind of advanced. Easy to use an interface like this. So, I mean, reducing noise in photos. There's the photo of the highway where you're able to take out the power lines and then the trash by basically removing them from the photo by injecting surrounding pixels to sort of destroy them in the photo. It's very, very cool.
It is.
Yeah. It's all rocket science to me. I'm not going to lie. I'm a picture Luddite, I guess is the way I can put it. But the one that blew me away was how they took a picture that appeared almost like a trapezoid because it was taken at an angle, and they're able to square it out. That's a little freaky. See, I don't understand that. That to me is like magic.
I don't see that.
The very last picture in the set.
Yeah, check it
out. It's literally a picture.
For some reason, it's blanked out for me.
Oh, must be on Mac or something.
No. Okay, I see it now.
Maybe you're not smart enough.
I am on Windows. No. So yeah,
are you running Solus OS, Steve? If not, Google it. You should be able to find it out.
Yeah.
But if I can't figure it out, Cody?
Then, despite Dor's sensibility toward the issue, I'll help you after the show.
Thanks.
I have to be the compassionate one now. He can be the gray beard gung ho guy.
Yeah. I was going to tell him to email Windows Weekly. But of course he can't put his Call of Duty down long enough to actually talk to people. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
We got to go to the next one.
Yes.
We went from a couple apps that were really honestly basic, stripped down and dirty kind of apps. This is the inverse. This application to me is pretty much enterprise grade looking. It's an application called Project Libra, R-E at the end. This is also compatible with Microsoft Project 2007. I take that as being a huge feature, okay? If you're running Project 2007 in your office and if your boss is telling you it's getting close time to upgrade, you can download Project Libra and try to open up your project files in there. And if it works, say, dude, we don't have to upgrade. Now give me a raise. That's just, I'm sorry, Microsoft Project 2010.
Okay.
And hold on, I had to crack my neck because this. And to try to make it more comfortable to Windows users, they have a ribbon interface. Oh my goodness. That just really just caused me to lose 3 months of my life when I said that. Mm-hmm. I will say I'm not a project manager. My brother-in-law is. I deal with project managers every day. They're special. They have special needs. That's what I'm thinking. That's the best way I can put it. They need a lot of time lapse. They need a lot of flow. They need a lot of layout. They need a lot of stuff I can't even pronounce. From everything I can tell, because I did show this to a project manager at my work, and they said, and I quote, "And how much is this?" I said, "It's free." And he said, "Nah, they'll charge you later or something." So he was kind of shocked at the features that it had.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and he drinks a lot of scotch when we go out, but that's different. Completely different. Nah, I'm just messing around.
Well, looking at it myself, I mean, I'm trying to organize a big project here, and if you've ever had anything like that, and ultimately, I think that this is going to suit the needs of like what Dorsey, more of like a professional right off the bat, but. It, just like with any piece of software, like if you're using like a, like in the previous example, we're talking about using GIMP for simple photo editing, you can use advanced software, but only use a fraction of the tools and the features inside the software to have it suit your needs and your project in this case. So, sure. But if you're ever about to, set off on something like this, just getting all of those ideas in one place and being able to look at them as opposed to thinking, oh yeah, I'll write them down later, just having it like text doc, because one of the photos in this on this page almost reminds me of a piece of mind mapping software I used to use, just to try to get it all kind of laid out, not necessarily in any order, but just having any of your ideas in one place where you can utilize them is very, very powerful, especially when you're trying to embark on a big project. So check this out.
Right, and super quick question, Steve. I know you technically don't own any Macs, but you're the guy I'm asking. DMG, is that a Mac installer file extension?
Yeah.
Okay. This is available for Windows Mac install packages for RPM or Red Hat, maybe Fedora or OpenSUSE, and they do have Deb files as well for Ubuntu and Debian-based distributions. And the disclaimer I got to give, technically speaking, it's in beta 5. So I would say it's not perfect, ready for prime time, but it wouldn't shock me if it's beta 5. I mean, it's not like it's beta 2 something. Play with it. Try it. See if it does what you want. And if you do, provide feedback to encourage this guy to keep moving forward.
All right.
And I'm sticking with that. Okay. This next thing, I have to preface with what this is. This is a type of configuration that would be useful for people who want to set up wireless hotspots or internet cafe, etc., i.e. a controlled border like thing, where a wireless access point, technically speaking, I could have went to OLF, and I could have went to the Hyatt. And I could have set up this and charged people money for Wi-Fi because they don't have free Wi-Fi at the Hyatt. But I could have underbid them by like $2. And I could have made money. Okay, this is a how to forge article. And it's entitled PFSense plus Squid Guard and Traffic Shaping Tutorial. But what this tutorial enables you to do is to create a gateway that also does proxying and advanced firewall things. So you can take this, follow the tutorial, put it up. You will have an enterprise-grade firewall with enterprise-grade packet shaping and permissions on them. So you can literally push people through a system to where, you know, I'm at Cody's house, but I hop on Cody's guest Wi-Fi, and all of my packets are shaped. Like whenever I try to access YouTube or Netflix or anything else that's a bandwidth hog, this box can literally shape my packets down and give me less priority. Where when I'm just doing normal web traffic, I could be getting the same speeds he's getting. This is really advanced. This is really high end. This is really powerful. But if you want to hypothetically offer a customer of yours the ability to have like Starbucks type Wi-Fi in their place, this is what can get you like 90%+ of the way there.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I'll say, yeah, I can't say this enough. How to Forge is one of the places that clearly documents everything from soup to nuts, beginning to end, pillar to post, fit to finish. I don't know, whatever those sayings are. Now, you can keep going, but I don't know. Because, I mean, seriously, have you ever seen so many screenshots? If you just page down in that link, it's kind of ridiculous.
It's very nice of them.
Well, apparently they take something serious. And that's screenshots and steps. Yeah, they kind of go ballistic. And it's all of one page long. I don't like places that purposely segment thing to five pages just so that
you can see more ads. Yeah, me neither. I hate it.
Got to get those ads in somehow, right?
Apparently so, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, now we're going to get to regular expressions. And I will say this. Okay. The hardest thing to get a new person to understand is what's a regular expression and why would I need it? Okay. Definition of regular expressions is, in computing, a regular expression provides a concise and flexible means to match strings of text, such as particular characters, words, or patterns of characters. Here's the example I'll give. I was asked to do a little bit of, I can't even think of the word, diagnosis on a MDB file. I think that was it. Microsoft Access file. And they had it, quote unquote, password protected. So all I did was I took the file, I opened it in Notepad++, and then I did a regular expression for number, 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 dash, number, 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 dash. What regular expressions enabled me to do was not to say, I'm looking for 1, 2, 3, 4, dash, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, dash. Okay. Regular expressions allows you to use basically semi wild cards. It's in the middle of a wild card and a exact search. So I could say, look for on my computer a file that begins with an uppercase character, then in the middle has numbers, and the file extension is .rtf. Where in every other basically search tool, you really can't say that. You can say wildcard characters. You know, you can say begins with R, you know, and you can force it to be uppercase, but you can't say show me all uppercase. Regular expressions is the thing in the middle that can take something that would be normally insanely complex to search for and make it really easy to search for. Now, the bad thing is, to be able to read regular expressions, you seriously need, I don't know,
knowledge.
Well, a PhD, dare I say. Yeah. Unless you're Unix Clubhouse Reg Exorcist, because his name is Reg Exorcist. He kind of can do it off the top of his head. So there's a great posting in the Podnuts forums by, I can't even pronounce that one, Mycroft MKIV.
MK4.
MK4. I'll definitely go for that. And it's a link to gskinner.com/regexer. This is the only GUI regular expression creator that I saw that actually gave me examples. Something to build off of and not just leaving me blind. So I was actually really happy with this because I did need to do this again at work. I needed to search for something that began with a letter and had three numbers. And I had no idea what the letter was. I just knew it was a letter and three numbers. So with regular expressions, I just said uppercase A through uppercase Z or lowercase A through lowercase Z followed by number, number, number. And, you know, 0 through 9, 0 through 9, 0 through 9. And with regular expressions, popped right up. The file was literally a 4 gig text file.
Jeez.
Jeez.
That's a big file. Okay.
Oh my God.
So I literally ran it and it turned for a second. And then there's the first instance. The guy behind me said, no, that ain't it. I hit search again. No, that ain't it. Hit search again. That ain't it. Fourth time. It was it. It was literally at line something like 6,800,000.
Wow.
Jeez.
Without regular expressions, I would have just told him, you're gonna have to try to remember that code. Cause, I don't know how to help you. Yeah, cause it would have just taken too long.
There you go. Did you demand a raise after that?
This guy has no power or say in my financial situation.
Okay.
Never mind. I'll just keep going. Okay, so regular expressions honestly are one of those things that can make you leet, that can make you look good. I highly encourage people spend a little bit of time trying to learn them. Seriously. And even on the Linux command line, I can do regular expression searches for text inside of files or whatever. So I know if it's a phone number, you know, number, 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 dash, four more numbers, there's a phone number. It's gold. Okay. I had to mention this one because I have to. Other shows have already mentioned it. I purposely waited for them to say stuff because I don't want to be the first one talking about this. I don't talk about politics here virtually ever. I got to make an exception for this one. And I don't know why, but the number one place I was able to find this story posted at was theregister.co.uk. Theregister.co.uk.
Oh, yeah.
Go figure. Okay. It's unclear exactly what happened, but I can tell you this. There's a Republican congressman in Staten Island, I want to say, named Michael Grimm, which his name is Grimm, so I guess stuff happens to him. Somebody broke basically every window in his office. Mm-hmm. They broke every window in his office. Then they proceeded to install Linux on all of his Windows computers. And then they left.
That's so funny.
I don't know how to say it, but apparently some people are taking a stand against this guy for using Windows, or they just wanted to try to delete his data and make a point at the same time. I don't know.
It's pretty, I mean, breaking the Windows, maybe not, but installing Linux on the machines, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah. I'll just say, I'll take any installs I can get, even when they're illegal. I count them as installs.
Nice.
Okay. And this next one, I honestly had to devote a minute for. That's why I rushed through the last one. Okay. There is no such thing as uncontrolled freedom, as total freedom. Okay. There is no such thing. And here's just another example of it. Okay. The Lego company 40 years ago had complete freedom. And they created Legos. And they created a patent. And they sued people out of existence when they made anything that would fit on a Lego or that looked like a Lego or anything. Okay. They had the freedom to do that. They, as a creator, took that availability of freedom and they used it for their own advantage. There's nothing wrong with that. But as a user, I was then limited what I could buy to play with my Legos. There was no competition. They had a complete control over the entire system of what I could buy if I wanted to play with Legos. That's not freedom. When freedom is not monitored, regulated, controlled by a entity, then someone will step up and take control of it. It's just a fact of life. When freedom is free, someone will control it. Okay. Finally, after I want to say 40 plus years, their patents ran out. They were not re-awarded new patents, which is why now you can't just go into the store and buy Legos. Okay, this is the real reason why you go in and they have SpongeBob Legos, Ninjago Legos, City Legos, all of these gimmick Legos. It's because now anybody can create Legos. So now they're trying to differentiate themselves. Okay. Because of that, because now Legos are quote unquote free with a capital F, there is no restraint on them. There's a guy, and the posting is by Fat. F-F-F-F-A-T. Okay. There's basically a thing the guy developed. I can't remember how much it was. It wasn't a whole lot. I want to say it was like $40 for the actual kit. And it's called the Universal Construction Kit, or the Free Universal Construction Kit. And the F is in free is capital, because this is not free of price. This is free of restraints. And what it is, this is a universal construction kit that can take and interlock Legos to Duplo to Fischer-Tricks to Gersi to Gersi's to Connects to Crinkles to Bristol Blocks to Lincoln Logs, Tinker Toys, Zoom, Zoob, Thingiverse, and a bunch of other different proprietary building things for toys. The only way I could get my Legos to work with anything when I was a kid was glue or duct tape. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And now, because they're capital F free, the Legos, people can now create these linking toys.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. And the best way and this is my example of what happens when something is actually turned free for the users. When it's free for the users, these kinds of tools come out. Now, do you think this is going to hurt the Lego company in any shape, way, or form?
No.
I can't see it. I can't see how it could hurt the Lego company. Only make them sell more.
Yep.
You know? And he does have a nice little poster showing all of the different things it can connect. And it is in PDF format, and it shows you actually how things can connect, how they are intended to go back and forth. And I'm sorry, you know, yeah, I think this is cool.
It is very cool.
Now, if I can only convince the white to let me buy some more stuff for the kid.
It's funny you mentioned this, because I was just at Toys R Us a couple nights ago, and my wife is all about my son's room is all decked out Nintendo like video game stuff, you know, and we were walking down the toy aisle, and they had, you know, Legos, and then they had the Kinects, and then they had Tinker Toys, and like a couple other ones, but they all have their own box sets. Like, you know, Lego is famous for, you know, having like all the Star Wars stuff, yeah. And then Kinects had like all the Nintendo character stuff, you know, like the big cities and the like the Mario Kart track and all this. And I was just blown away by how, like, I only saw four or five that night, and I was like, man, there are a lot of these different ones. It's just kind of hilarious. And then I see this poster, I'm like, oh wow, there are even more that I didn't know about. So to have something like this is pretty cool. Because yeah, man, okay, all I'm saying is, because of this, now I can put Mario in the Millennium Falcon. Okay, and I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna take out Chewie and be like, this is your new co-pilot, Han. Go. Just deal with it. Deal with it. It'll be great. Your plumbing on the Falcon will be in check.
Exactly. Yeah, so,
that's awesome.
So, I mean, not trying to sound dumb. When something is actually completely free, what it really entails is somebody else then has the freedom to control it. That's why certain organizations lean towards user freedom. Maybe a bit strongly. Yeah, okay, maybe. But if you don't lean towards users' freedom when the option or the choice is out there for companies to, they'll make things like Windows and Mac, where it's clearly leaned towards the company's freedom.
You got that right.
Yeah. You know, and I digress on that. Last thing I just want, this one I literally stumbled across an hour ago. So I didn't get a chance to look at it, but it looks like it could be cool as a super quick basic intro for the command line. And it's over at cli.learncodethehardway.org. That's a horrible URL. That's all I got to say, because I actually clicked through. Nothing here seemed to be the hard way. Okay.
Yeah.
It all seemed to be in very plain English. And the one thing I kind of liked was almost every section says, do this, do this, and do this, and do this. Now, you doing this, this is what you should have learned. This, and this, and this, and this. And now, here's how you can do more with what you just learned. Very task-oriented, real-world examples of these commands and how to use them.
Sweetness. That does look pretty cool.
Right. And I'll say it's not too long. It's literally only 24 chapters, quote-unquote chapters long. Each chapter would actually probably be a page, maybe a page and a half total. You know what I mean? So that's why I like this. And it does have a section in there for, I thought I saw a section here for VI. Oh, but there's a good finding files thing. Let me tell you something. That's something people should know, right? That's all I got to say. And just a super quick plug out there. This, to me, is a great precursor to a podcast called Linux in the Shell. It is intended Linux in the Shell, not for the shell. In the Shell. And it isn't looking like it.
You said that.
Okay. Well, there'll be a link in the notes because apparently I can't type and talk at the same time and find it. Linuxinthesshell.org. This, to me, is a step above intro. So you do the intro, the Code the Hard Way book, then you go to linuxinthesshell.org. This, to me, is just above newbie. And by just above newbie, I mean it's a lot of information, but it's literally just above newbie.
Awesome. Great stuff, Dor, as usual. Thank you for bringing it.
No problem.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to messing with that book. Having something, and each of the sections is small enough to where it doesn't seem so daunting, especially learning the command line. I mean, there's so much, but using it as a kind of a stepping stone would be great.
Yeah, that was one of the things that saved me, my psyche, when I saw, oh, good, I don't have to read a lot. It's just, here's the raw, now do it.
He does tell you you need to memorize, too, and that he also trains you how to memorize things.
He
put some effort into this.
Well, I did see that, and that's the part, to me, where he goes above and beyond.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he not only tells you what, but he tells you how you can get into a routine to where you memorize things. Because repetition, I think, really is one of the keys to remembering stuff.
Oh, totally. All right, what do you say? Want to hear a voicemail and then I'll read a bunch of emails?
I like voicemails.
Sounds good.
All right, here we go.
Hi, it's Black Hammer listening to...
Can you guys hear that okay? Or should it beat up a little bit?
It's a little low.
Okay, rewind it. Here we go.
Hi, it's Black Hammer listening to Linux for the Rest of Us, the one with Cody Cooper, not this week before last. Just want to say, Cody, I'm going to take you up on that high five limited edition, preferably right-handed, but we will take a left-handed one at Ohio Linux Fest. And just wanted to say thank you for the show, guys. And I had I had a brain freeze here. I was going to make a recommendation for something I wanted to hear about at OLF. Oh, yes, Steve C's impression of the HostGator girls. That would be a very important one to include. And if he doesn't give it, then I will give it as his alter ego, the better looking one. Bye.
So that's obviously an old voicemail.
I know, and I'll say, Rhino, you're lucky I didn't hear that earlier. Because Jeff might have won the book.
I can't, but first of all, I can't believe he wanted me to do an impression of the Hostgator girls. And second of all, there wasn't even any Hostgator girls there this year.
No. But no. We can go on about that forever. I will say, though,
that super lame.
Blackhammer is the only one that took me up on that offer, and I didn't even really realize it when it happened. I'm thinking back to it now. The first thing he did was come up to me, Cody, high five, boom.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, it was when we were hanging out with Mad Dog, and then he and Ellis walked in, and I was sitting down, and Jeff's he's taller than I am, so it was awkward being sitting down and having something like prop up for a high five for you, but he did it. And as a prize, Jeff, I'll give you a limited edition double high five next year at OLF.
Damn, man, you're just sparing no expense.
None.
Very cool.
All right, thank you, Jeff.
And just
it was fun hanging out with Jeff.
And just mentioning high five really quick. I made my wife laugh and laugh at me, saying you're such a friggin' dork. Today on the way to work, she put a bag in the trunk that had stuff that was almost loose and flimsy to where it was going to fall apart. I drove 26 miles through traffic and bad conditions to work, more than 26 miles back, so I had to do another little stop. And when we got to her dad's house, I opened the trunk and it was sitting there pristine. And she said, it didn't fall apart. I said, of course, thanks to my expert driving self high five. And she just turned to me and said, what did you just do? I said, cause I know you're not going to give me a high five. I got to give myself a high. I have to give myself a self high five. And I did it again. And she just started laughing hysterically. She said, you are the biggest dork I've met.
That's a good one. Self high five. Yeah. I got to give myself a bunch of them.
And I said, hey, sometimes high fives make you feel good, even if it's a self high five. And I'm really happy her dad wasn't looking out the window, because I'm sure he would have said, what in the hell is he doing?
That's funny. All right. How about another one here?
Sure.
This is from Joshua. This is an email, not a voicemail. He says, let me lean in here so I can see it. He says, hey, Dor, I appreciate the shout on episode number 102. If I am that Joshua, I think I am. I am more than happy to support you and your efforts. What you do and how you do it has definitely had an effect on my life. As a result, I have a deep respect for you and your opinion. For this reason, I want to run something by you. Is this for the show, Dor? Do you know this one?
I think.
I'm going to read it. I hope it's for the show. He says, I want to learn a little extra money on the side to better support my family, and I'm thinking of setting up a computer repair business. I would focus on quality and price, as I don't have a lot of time. I work with a 3+ hour round trip commute, go to school, and I am a scoutmaster. In order to set myself apart, I had what I consider to be a small epiphany. I think it would be great, business-wise, and more importantly on a personal level, to in some way cater to those that have accessible computing needs. To do this, I would need a strong knowledge of accessible hardware and software so that I can set up, train, and support my clientele. My thought/idea was that this could be best accomplished if I had some sort of certification for myself and my business. I think this could be accomplished through the Accessible Computing Foundation if they had this cert. This would serve two purposes. First, it would give me and my business credibility. Second, it would provide the AACF with a ground force to help spread their message. The idea is in its fledgling stages. It came as I was thinking of how I could better help ACF after listening to Jonathan Nato on Linux for the Rest of Us. Let me know what you think, and if you think it is an idea worth pursuing, maybe you could pass it on to Jonathan. On a related side note, I know that at some point I will have the privilege of joining you and Steve on the show. Cody now. If possible, I would really love it if Jonathan could join us on that show. I'd really like to meet him, as I have grown to respect him through your show. Also, not to leave Steve C out, I have a great respect for him and what he has accomplished through Podnuts. Podnuts is my first podcast and is why I love podcasts. Thank you for all that you do. Have a happy !
Yeah, I kind of did want this talked about only for this reason. Okay. As time goes on, it seems like the population of this earth is only going up. As time goes on, it only seems like more people are suffering from disabilities where they need accessibility in one shape, way, or form. As time goes on, the internet is only becoming more of a backbone of communications for everyone, period. So if you can't access it, there's so much of the world that you just can't do. I personally also can say, to get somebody to say that, to willingly say, I want to start a business based upon accessible computing, you typically have to pay people to do this kind of thing. You have to basically put like prizes out and say, I'll pay you $3,000 if you start a business about accessible computers, and we'll give you logos and we'll give you polo shirts kind of thing. Jonathan is having people step up and say, I would like to do this. I firmly believe that, like I said a year ago, the mini computer thing was on the way up and it's going to be a huge thing, and it kind of is a big thing now. If you can offer a niche service, it's going to be almost impossible for someone else to wedge you out of that niche service. And if you are anywhere by like a retirement area or a VA type area, offering accessible computing solutions is needed right now. It's needed kind of majorly right now. So if you as a computer tech want to offer accessible solutions to people who need them, I do believe saying to your customer, I have the support of the ACF, the ACF.co, can only make you look better. Now, I will say to people, you have to be a little bit patient right now, because it really is a small team working as directors and leaders and office people in the ACF, because they are in the process of growing. They're in a very early stage. I ask you for patience, but open up a line of talking with them, email them, get in contact with them if this is something that you want to do, to make sure they know people have this interest. The more people that show the interest, the better, the quicker Jonathan's going to make things available for you. And the example we're going to talk about next week is Jonathan's distro that he's basically authoring, where it is completely accessible focused.
Yeah, I think they would be thrilled to get an email from you. I would have no hesitation of firing one off to the ACF, Joshua.
Yeah.
No, it's... sorry, Steve.
Yeah,
I was going to say, it's a win-win. I mean, he's coming at this from all the right angles. He's trying to hit that niche market, like Dor's saying, while at the same time sort of promoting the ACF and potentially giving them another avenue that they might not have thought about. I mean, I got to talk to Jonathan, a lot the past few months, and not once did I ever hear of any sort of a certification idea for this. So, yeah, I mean, definitely, I mean, contact them. And I emailed Jonathan today, basically saying that, because I installed a Sonar yesterday, and I got to tell you, I mean, we'll talk more about it next week, according to Dor, but... I can't contribute that much, I mean, as far as manipulating the OS, but I emailed him and said, hey, if there's anything you guys need done, I mean, maybe give me a list. If I can do anything to help you guys out, let me know. And being that, as Dor said, they're in these early stages, if you want to contribute any time to anything, I mean, who knows what they have on their plate and what they need to get done, but I'm sure with contributors like Joshua and with us, they can get this ramped up and get a good one even faster.
Wow, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, and I'll add, the main reason I liked Joshua and everything that he said was he had a focus on customer service. You know, yes, superior customer service will set you apart and give you the ability to, I don't want to say charge more, but charge a competitive rate and still yet blow your competitors away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Took the words out of my mouth.
Right. And then to fill this niche that, let's just say, the Geek Squad can't even spell accessibility, you know, you are the captain of your own ship.
Yep.
Even if it's an Enterprise with Captain Jonathan T. NATO to him.
And thank you. I'm really glad you've been enjoying the shows. Thank you for the compliments to all of us. And hope you keep enjoying the show, Joshua. Much appreciated. Thanks for the email. All righty. More we have from Higgs. Higgs says, the subject line is Next Phone's crowdfunding choice. Unlike if they had gone with Kickstarter, if this product does not meet its funding goal, they will still keep the money donated. I would have respected them more for using a different crowdfunding platform. Right now it's vaporware, but the quote idea guy doesn't lose anything. That's regarding that Next Phone prototype that was being created, which is a great, frigging awesome, brilliant idea, and I love it. But looks like Higgs has a problem with the their funding choice, because if it doesn't happen, they get to keep the money.
Well, the Kickstarter, the one I saw was at Kickstarter. At Kickstarter, you don't get...
It wasn't Indiegogo?
I could have swore it was Kickstarter.
No, I think it was Indiegogo.
Was it Indiegogo?
Yeah.
Well, I'll say this. Kickstarter does have a lot of limitations where some people can't use it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was one of them. But there are reasons why people cannot use Kickstarter. For instance, I know Nightwise is in Belgium. He can't use it. Even if he wanted to use it, cannot use it. He's outside of the U.S.
I got you. Well, let's hope that... thanks for filling us in on that and making us more aware of that. If we did want to donate to Next Phone, was it called?
Yeah.
I hope it does come to fruition. It's a great idea. And I think if he doesn't pull it off, then one of the major companies are going to do something like that eventually. So,
yeah. And I'll say, just getting anything stirring up about this kind of concept is good in my book.
I agree. And also, you guys have to realize that, I mean, from the standpoint as a potential donator, no matter what amount you're giving, you have to kind of, at the time you donate it, realize, okay, this money isn't mine anymore. And in this case, if it is going to this person or this entity in order to produce this product, and they don't get enough, well, chances are they're not just going to, you know, buy a bunch of boats and houses with whatever money they have. It's going to go into helping fund their next project or perhaps a more advanced version of the thing they're working on before. So,
you would hope.
You would hope. Well, and that's me being, whatever. Pick your spots. And realize that if it is something you believe in, if it's something you want to see happen in the world, whether it be something like accessibility with Jonathan or a product like this, just do what you can. Don't second guess it, because if you have all these people kind of wobbling on the fence, then that could be the thing that doesn't make it happen. And then who's to blame at that point?
Right. I got you. I'm with you on that. Totally. Well, let's see what happens in the future with that.
Good luck.
Denning sent a link of somebody brewing beer with a Raspberry Pi. It's the title of the article is Brewing Beer with Raspberry Pi. The site is element14.com. That's the word element and 14.com. Head on over to that site, type in Brewing Beer with Raspberry Pi. The link is very long, so I'm just not going to read it. They basically show Brewing Beer with a Raspberry Pi. What do you think about that, you guys?
Genius.
I think that no matter what you can use to brew beer, just brew beer. And if it isn't good beer, then change up what you're doing and make better beer.
Right. But I'll say, at least this way, I could say, I'm sorry, there was a bug in my code. It just didn't come out right.
There you go. Right. My sister's husband, he and his friends have this ridiculous place where they brew their own beer. And I'm talking like temperature controlled rooms and all sorts of high end computer equipment. So when I hear him talk about the thousands of dollars that they poured in between the eight of them to build this thing, and then I hear about a guy doing the Raspberry Pi, I'm like, well, this is the future. Heck, I could build this in my closet and have it running while I'm at work.
$25. Yeah, right. Cheap on the cheap.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. And I'll say what the Pi is doing besides monitoring temperature and condition, I believe this also has the power to automate certain pumps and valves to automatically transfer the beer.
Into your mouth?
Not into your mouth, but from the initial fermenter into the chiller kind of thing.
Nice.
And that was actually semi-accurate terms I used there. So Tracy would be proud of me.
I know. You sound like an expert.
Yeah. And if you go to brewpie.com, that's where you can actually download the code and see screenshots of the software in use, because you do have a web GUI and you can customize this. It's designed to where you can customize this software. So you can go buy a Raspberry Pi, buy all the equipment, install the software on the Pi, insert your own logo right there. So you can have Supercoops Brew.
Nice.
And then people can see, for instance, history graphs of all the things going on, multiple screenshots to where you can see all kinds of information. And I gotta say, that's a pretty nice looking interface.
Oh, geez. Yeah, it looks awesome.
There goes my free time.
Hey, if you're brewing Supercoop Light, I'll take one of them.
I'll make a Supercoop Light.
I don't know. I want Supercoop Imperial Ale.
Oh, dude, I'm all about the dark brews. I'm gonna be equal opportunity brew hound, and I will I will branch off and hit all the major. If you love a wheat, you love IPA, stout, porter, lager, whatever. Wow. Man, I'm there for you.
That's dedication.
I can't wait to try it.
Yeah.
All right, let's do more emails here. This is for a contest entry from for the Pocket Edition Linux book, and it's from Nord1C. Nordic. Oh, I get it. Nordic. But there's a zero and a one in there. Okay, he says, here's something. That's Leet. Here's something I would like to hear about either at OLF or on a regular cast. I have an old laptop I have since put Linux on and started my journey with my Linux foo. I will soon be getting a new PC, and I will have a desktop that would be perfect to use for a file/web server. Is there anything in the Linux world that could help me accomplish this, or a tutorial somewhere where I could follow step by step? Sort of falls in line with what Dore was going to talk about in his speech entitled Linux is Installed, Now What? I think that was what it was called anyway. Thanks for making the podcast. I have enjoyed entering this wonderful new world of open source. That's from Mike, a.k.a. Nordic.
Okay, to be honest, for anything resembling enterprise stuff, was it How to Geek was the earlier link we had? How to Forge, I'm sorry. Anything resembling enterprise solutions, How to Forge does an epic job on. And they have step-by-step-by-steps on how to install anything from firewalls, gateways, DNS servers, DHCP servers, FTP servers, Samba servers, share servers, web servers, virtualization servers, Pixie servers, OpenVPN servers. I mean, the list literally goes on to make your head spin. So I would say that to me is a very good jumping off point to see if you can find something there to meet your exact need. I honestly don't remember seeing this email in the past, but I've missed a lot of emails in the last 2 weeks. I'll say that.
Yeah, we're doing some catching up here.
Yeah.
The next one is the one from Rob asking about Richard Stallman. And I don't know if you want me to read that on the show.
No.
Okay. Next one is from Denning. He says, hello, I do not remember if you talked about a phone that could be used as a desktop computer. I saw a project on Indiegogo trying to get Linux running on Android devices. And that's at indiegogo.com/Linux on Android. Have you guys seen this? Fundraiser to get Android devices for the devs of LOA.
Hmm. Oh, let me, no, but,
I'm familiar with the project, not the fundraiser to get the devices for him. Yeah, I'm all for it. Heck, I'll go kick in some cash tonight.
Yeah, if this is what I think it is, this is the guy who's looking to, in any shape, way, or form, get Linux applications, worst case scenario, Linux commands, Linux applications, or maybe even full-blown Linux to run on Android devices. I believe this was the guy who was looking for Nexus 7 owners.
Yep.
This is an ongoing project seeking to get Linux distros running on as many Android devices as humanly possible. So far, we've been able to get over 400 plus known working ROM device combinations on over 200 plus devices. However, our own range of testing devices is limited. He's a student, and that's why they're posting this up. So you might want to check it up. Check up there. They're only looking for $1,500. They're up to $616. Looks pretty cool.
Very cool.
Alrighty, well, good luck with that. And you guys can check out that link if you want. Let me see if there's anything else here. This is the last one before Ohio Linux Fest. Why don't we just get up to this one, Reg?
Sure.
He says, this is from Steve. He says, hey guys, just had to share something which reaffirmed my love of all things Linux and open source. Not sure if you will have discussed the recent release of FTL, which is FTLgame.com. It's a Kickstarter-funded roguelike game where you pilot a starship, manage your crew, and more often than not, explode in flames and failure. My mail isn't really about this game, as I could go on about it for pages. I had a problem in that I love the game, but wish I could play it on my netbook. Unfortunately, the game ran at a minimum of 1280 by 720, and my netbook screen is 1024 by 600. I gave up and lived on it. I gave up and lived with it for about a week before the addictiveness of the game forced me to look again. I remembered in the bad old days of broken video drivers that you sometimes had a game crash and you were left with a tiny resolution corner of the desktop. But if you were lucky, the screen would pan with your mouse around the desktop. Perhaps I could do something like that. I found a guide to using XRANDR, which is a command line program for setting up your X server, and while I found a way to do the panning, I found something even better, scaling. This knocked me out. I had no idea you could set up a large virtual desktop and scale it down inside X and display it on a low-res screen. I wish I knew about this ages ago, as I would have, as I have used netbooks since the first EPC 701 and always had one or two programs which just didn't fit on the screen. Okay, you lose some definition, but for some things you can live with that just to be able to see everything at once. FTL has a small bash script to start the game, so I just added the XRANDR command with parentheses scale 1.5 by 1.5 or 1.25 by 1.25 before the game binary is called, and another line at the end to switch it back. The game fits perfectly now, and I can waste even more time playing it. Hope I didn't ramble too much. Keep up the good work. And that is from Steve. That's pretty pretty good work there, Steve, I think, to find the solution, make it work, and have fun with it. You deserve, sir, to run Linux.
Yeah. not trying to sound dumb. I never heard of anything like this, and I literally had to read it a couple times. The game ran under a minimum of 1280 by 720. 1280 by 720. His netbook screen maximum resolution was 1024 by 600. Everybody would say then his netbook is incapable of running that game.
That's right.
But lo and behold, he's able to basically manipulate one of the layers in Linux, which is the X layer, to basically zoom out. Instead of zooming in on your desktop, you're basically zooming out further. And yes, you will see, I would say, a touch of distortion, but my guess is speed, you would almost see no difference at all. I would virtually guarantee you would see no difference in speed at all, but at least it would work.
Yeah. You know what I mean? He seems happy with it.
That's genius. That's all I got to say. Genius. Yeah,
it's great work. Great, really great work. It's impressive.
Yeah. And I'm going to have to bookmark XRNR
and anything you can do to utilize your current hardware. Because, I mean, if you think, I mean, I'm not bashing when I say this, but if you think of Windows gamers, okay, or PC gamers, which are primarily Windows gamers, if you want to play the latest and the greatest, you know, you got to slap down that money for the more RAM or the new processor or the new, you know, video card. And you're investing hundreds, if not thousands of dollars if you want to stay on the very, very bleeding edge. But this guy is running an HD game on a netbook with no additional funds thrown into his hardware. It was just a little bit of elbow grease, and he made it work, so I commend him.
Yeah, that's really good work. Awesome. Hey, people named Steve. You got the name Steve, you're in good shape. It's all working out for you.
You got it.
All right. Sorry.
I'm changing my name tomorrow.
Okay. Well, that is it for the emails for this show. Let's go around here, talk to the guys, see if there's any last comments they want to say, anything they want to plug for the folks. Start with Door.
If you want to know more about me, just go to doordoorgeek.com. And I'm once again going to ask people, if you listened to the last episode, which was episode 106, when I gave my talk at LLF, don't hesitate to send me feedback, positive, negative, whatever. I want to try to grow as a public speaker. And don't forget, this show is brought to you by Steve C. And it's a proud member of Podnuts. Hey, there you go.
Nice door.
No problem. I just kind of, you know, other programs pushing some network that I don't think they really know anything about, where we are deeply ingrained with Podnuts, and we're kind of happy being there. We don't need other networks backing us. Do we, Steve?
No,
I think so.
Okay. Nope. Didn't from the beginning. Didn't right now
either. And I salute you, sir.
I salute you as well. All right, Cody, what can you, or what do you want to say to the folks, and anything you would like to plug?
You guys can just hit me up on Google Plus. Once again, I am just excited to be on this show. Now in this capacity, it's a little sad for me, honestly, that this will be Steve's last official show. I mean, obviously, and I've talked to him about this before. Tomorrow, he says, "Man, I made a mistake. I want to be back on the show." He's back on the show. I'm not, you know, taking over anything other than just being the guy that's gonna listen to Door live in the same hangout every week. But If you guys, and some of you guys know me, some of you guys listen to me on the show, I welcome any questions at all, whether it be through an email on the show, through a voicemail on the show. If you want to hit me up on Google Plus personally and ask me anything, whether it be a Linux question, something about me, whatever, I'm completely open to you. So feel free to do that. Other than that, know that this is a proven formula. You know, these guys have put out over 100 episodes. And I'm just happy to be along for the ride. I'm not looking to throw a wrench into anything. It's going to operate the same. I'm just going to be bringing what I think I should bring, is my perspective and my questions from my point of view. And that's what you'll get from me on Linux for the rest of us from now on. And I hope you enjoy it.
Awesome. That's awesome, Cody. Thanks. And just know, guys, we would not have brought Cody on if we didn't think it would make the show even better. So, I'm confident of that. Cody and Dora get along great. It's just going to be a fun time. So I'm looking forward to listening to the shows. And like I said, I'll pop in here and there if they let me, and put in my two cents and keep Dora honest. You know, somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, and there was no blackmail from LLF that Cody used on us to leverage his way into the show or anything.
Not at all. No pictures.
Not that we know of,
video,
anyway.
No audio. Nothing. Nothing at all.
We never pushed the issue, so nothing ever came to the surface, but... All right. I just want to say, it has been a blast doing this show. I mean that, Door. I've looked forward to Tuesdays. If I'm having a bad Tuesday, and I'm like, it's going to be okay, because I'm talking to Door that night, and we just... You know, we're friends. We hang out, and I really enjoy talking with you, and I really enjoyed the show. I've learned a ton.
You know, just because I have not put some of this knowledge into use in the physical world doesn't mean I didn't learn it. And like I said, I just bought a netbook tonight, and Linux is going on it either tonight or tomorrow. So I'm psyched about that. Thank you, Dor, for, you know, being such a rock solid co-host and part of this show. It's just it's been a great 100 so episodes, right? What
do you think? No problem. I will thank you for caving in to my repetitive pressure to do this show.
You know, that's so long ago, I don't even remember.
Oh, I harassed you for a while.
It was a good it was a good choice, man.
And I kept just bold-faced lying to you. Oh, we can tie it into computer repair once in a while too, Steve.
Okay, I think it's coming back to me now. Anyway, thanks for all the support you guys out there that are listening, watching throughout the time. I hope you continue to, because like I said, this show will be better. It'll be more fun, and we're going to keep it going for a while. So thanks, everybody. This is Steve C. signing out for Linux for the Rest of Us. Enjoy Dor and Cody into the future, and see you next time.